Welcome back to the Skulls Cast. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And today we are doing a Spult Cast about Magic the Gathering.
Spult
and we're
level.
Skipping through our segment. There's no segment today because we ran out of questions in the hopper. So
the
we're
hopper
just
is empty. If we
were right
to turn
it
on, disaster would result.
So this cast is for the beginning Magic player. You probably have a kind of familiarity with the rules. You've summoned creatures and cast spells before. You've played land, so you kind of understand those interactions. And if you need to learn more about those interactions, then I can provide links to the rules themselves, both the simplified rule book and the not-so-simplified rule book called the Magic the Gathering Comprehensive Rules, which proves that Magic was and is the most complicated game ever created by a human. Ever.
Wizards.
So I'll provide links to those, but what we're talking about today in cast number 42 is a format, a variant multiplayer format of Magic the Gathering called Two-Headed Giant. Medibot and myself are what you'd call experts at this. We're at the famous level of Two-Headed Giant.
We were famous as hell that other week.
Much famousness.
The loops.
When I finally won with the last card in my library. It was a good feeling. Now, this variant format, if you don't mind my diving right into it, involves teams of two players. You usually play in a tournament to do Two-Headed Giant, and it's usually a limited tournament, meaning you buy the product and build a deck out of the product that you buy on the spot, and so does every other team.
Yes.
In limited, you are allowed to have 40-card decks at the minimum. You can have more than that, but it's good to build 40-card decks so that you have, like, quickest access to the best cards available to you. The twist to Two-Headed Giant on this limited format is that your team shares a product pool. So when Medibot and I played, we were handed out our product involving 6 packs, I think it was?
No, 8 packs. 6 packs is for solo sealed.
Really? That seems like a lot. Maybe I've just been playing terrible sealed.
It's definitely 8 packs.
Well, anyway, they handed us 8 packs, 8 booster packs of Magic the Gathering product, and we had to crack them open and sort them into piles and build 2 decks out of them.
Yes, one
because
for each
of us. Teams of two. Each player gets a deck. Each player is on a team. Teams take their turns together. So during our shared turn, we draw a card, play a land, cast a creature or a spell, we attack with our creatures at the other team.
Yes.
They block as a team.
Yes.
And then we have a second main phase and an end phase. And then the other team begins their shared turn. They draw a card, like so, and it keeps going back and forth that way. So in a way, you're like one entity. You're one team. That's why they call it Two-Headed Giant, evoking the image of a single body creature who has 2 heads who communicate with each other, argue with each other. Maybe they can control the same hand. Maybe they control, like, opposite hands or something. And that's how the game is played.
Yes.
In addition, you start at a higher life total.
Yes, you start at 30 life.
Yeah, you start at 30 life. It used to be 40, but they decided that games were taking too long at that, and it was too often going to time or going to mill or something, so they changed it to 30 to be a little quicker. That's also why the card from Dark Ascension called Chalice of Life, Chalice of Death.
Yes.
Mentions a number higher than your starting life total.
Yes.
Because teams share a life total, that would be that value. So Chalice of Life would specify higher than the starting 30.
Yes.
So, what else rules-wise is different about this?
You alluded to a little earlier was that you, when you attack with your creatures, you attack the team, and they block as a team. So Kaz and I are on a team, and I can send some of my creatures to attack, and he can send some of his creatures to attack. But we don't say, oh, you have to block my creatures, and the other one of you has to block Kaz's. Either of our opponents can block any of our creatures in any configuration. I think they're even allowed to say that, oh, you know, one of my creatures, you know, we want to do a double block. One of my creatures and one of my teammates' creatures both block this attacking creature.
Right. And they're also allowed to block for each other's planeswalkers.
Yes.
So
you
that's
get a planeswalker down.
That's how that.
However,
things
out. That say target player or each player, you still have to choose an individual
right.
at the table.
And effects like Earthquake will effectively deal double damage to players.
Yes.
Well, they'll deal double damage to teams because each team has two players. If I cast an Earthquake for three, then I take three damage, Medibot takes three damage, and both of our opponents take three damage, so each team takes six.
Yes.
So those effects get much different in this format. That's what the shared life total does. And the attacking and blocking thing can sometimes be a little weird, and don't hesitate to call a judge over if you think you don't understand how it works.
Call a judge.
Yeah.
Tip number one, call a judge.
We tried the same thing and actually got kind of a runaround on it, that's a story for another time. The point is, at events that are worth a damn, there will be judges, and you can call them, and you should call them. They're really friendly. They get trained in friendliness, in fact.
Yes, that's part of the course.
It's one of the requirements.
And as long as your opponents aren't jerks, they won't mind.
Yeah, and anybody who tries to stop you from calling a judge is wrong. It's not wrong
is a jerk.
To call for a judge. Okay, so if they try to convince you, hey, no, we don't need a judge, you stop right there, and it doesn't matter what you're talking about or what side of the argument you're on at that point. Nothing should stop them from, or nothing should stop you from trying to correctly arbitrate the rules, okay? So just call them over. They'll be happy to sort things out vis-a-vis attacking and blocking as a team.
Yes.
So, right. If either one of you loses, your team loses. Okay, so there's a built-in loss condition to Magic where if you reach zero life, you lose, right? That's the main one. Well, we share a life total, so that doesn't make a difference for Medibot or myself. But we do have individual libraries. I get mine, and he gets his. So the other loss condition in Magic, where if you would draw a card from an empty library, you lose, that's applied individually.
Yes.
So, in the games that Medibot and myself played, I had cards that allowed me to draw extra cards.
Oh, yes.
So I ran through my library faster, and if I had drawn from my empty library, we would lose as a team.
Yes.
So that's something to keep in mind. Finally, any effects that trigger for the defending player? Take for example, the example is way better for this. The example of Hypnotic Spectre. This is a card from way back in the day that got a couple of reprintings recently. Why don't you quote us Hypnotic Spectre, Medibot?
Hypnotic Spectre, let's see if I can do this off of my head. One in double black?
That's correct.
For a 2/2 Spectre with flying and a special ability, when Hypnotic Spectre deals combat damage to an opponent, that opponent discards a card from their hand at random.
I believe it says player, but that doesn't really matter because he has to be attacking.
Yes.
So, yes, he hits them, and they discard at random. Well, that's kind of ambiguous if you're attacking a team, right?
Right.
Which one of them discards, or do both of them? In cases like this, you select which player is going to discard.
And by you, we mean the attacker controlling
the hypnotic spectre. Yeah, the guy who controls the hypnotic spectre. So, yeah. In cases like that, you would say, okay, and he's going to make you discard, or make you discard. Because it's your effect.
Yes.
But at any rate, if stuff like that gets weird, call the judge over. They're more than happy to help. As applies to the strategy that is involved with Two-Headed Giant, you kind of have to take what you know about limited formats and change it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Turn it sideways and kind of mush it around a bit. I think there's lots of mushing involved in the strategy. Stuff that's good in limited formats. Why don't you quote me some of those, Medibot?
Stuff that's good in limited formats. Kill spells.
Yeah, kill spells really good.
Yep.
You know, murder that. Yeah.
What else? It's just good. Giant unsolvable fatties.
Unsolvable things, sure, but being too giant is not good, actually, in limited formats. That's part of the point I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. Well, you want things that are, I guess, efficiently...
Yeah, I mean, you do like to have, like, one or two bombs in your deck, but you don't want them to be more than, like, six mana, for instance.
Right, you want your dragon or your...
Yeah, you want a dragon.
Giant worm or whatever.
Dragons are good.
What else? Usually auras are pretty bad.
Auras are terrible.
But equipment's alright. Evasion is
pretty
great.
Good. Evasion is king.
You want to be flying or intimidating or something.
How about the 2-mana 2-1?
Ooh, the
Goblin Piker.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an aggressive deck, having Pikers is pretty alright. They're not the most exciting creature to play, but you can play them.
Yeah, a lot of people deride the Piker, but ultimately he's a cornerstone of any limited format, as is the Grizzly Bear, the 2-mana 2-2.
Yes. And, of course, extending into the Grey Ogre and the Hill Giant, the Grey Ogre being a 3-mana 2-2, and the Hill Giant being a 4-mana
2-2. Still pretty
3-2.
Okay. He's like, you know, better than a Grey Ogre for playability. And these are some of the rules of general, like, limited formats. That's kind of what you want your deck to look like. You want to have a pretty low curve that starts out at 2-mana and has removal spells and 2-mana 2-power creatures. You want to have evasive creatures. You want to have at least one bomb, but you don't really want it to cost more than 6 mana. And that's what your limited deck should look like if you're going to do
in
well.
In the most basic sense.
In Two-Headed Giant, you don't really want that. Yeah. Not exactly. You have to mush it a little. That idea needs to just shift this way a little bit, where this way is to the higher end of the mana cost curve.
You, essentially, have more life.
Mm-hmm. You know, so even though, like, in an individual sense, you start with 15, in a very real sense, like, number of total turns taken to amount of damage able to do, you have more. You have more time.
Yes. As a result, the game will probably go longer, and you will be able to cast bigger, you know, your more expensive spells.
Indeed. There are even... I forgot this. There are built-in rules to the format that make it easier to get your mana or cast your spells. Instead of the usual mulligan rules, each player gets one free mulligan.
Yes.
In the sense that if you don't like your opening 7, you can pass it back, shuffle your deck, and draw a different opening 7 before you go down to 6 and then 5 and so on using the Paris mulligan rules, which are standard for all other formats. The reason this is because the games themselves are individually very long, and you only play one game in a round.
Yes. Two-Headed Giants Limited is a best-of-one format rather than the usual best-of-three.
Yes.
So this also means that packing things like enchantment or artifact removal are a bit more advisable.
It's more important.
Because you don't have, you know, game two to sideboard in your specific answers to potentially problematic cards.
If you think you're going to need those answers at all, you'd better include one. It may be worth the spot. Yes. At least it's worth the spot in your collective deck.
Yes.
You know?
Keep in mind, my
deck didn't have a naturalize, but many bots did, and we thought that was important.
Yes. But between the
one
two
of us
you,
should have it.
You want to be able to solve most, if not all, problems. But it's important to understand that, you know, each individual deck on its own could be a bad deck. What's important is that the two decks together are a good pair of decks.
And a good pair of decks for the format.
Yes.
So, what else is good in Two-Headed Giant that isn't good in regular limited formats? Bigger things,
bigger
basically.
Things.
The 2-mana 2-1 is about the last creature that I ever want to have in my Two-Headed Giant deck.
Yes.
Even if he's like, even if he had First Strike, even if he was awesome, if he's a 2-mana 2-1, I don't want him. He's too weak. He doesn't deal damage fast enough to the opponent in order to justify it. You'd have to have something else to him. If he was unblockable, now we're talking. 2-mana 2-1 unblockable? Yeah, I think I could run that in a Two-Headed Giant deck. If I had some way to, you know, beef him up. Or if my partner was running an aura that could beef him up.
Yes.
That'd be alright. Auras get better because you have more targets. You know, Medibot's deck had the Hexproof guy.
Yes.
And I was running a powerful aura. I threw my powerful aura on the Hexproof guy.
Mm. Powerful aura on Hexproof guy is a known, understandable, you know, good plan. And our two decks worked together to generate that plan.
There's no way that Medibot's deck itself could have run the mana in order to play that aura himself, but I was already running that mana, so it was easy on me. So the two decks together in that sense become greater than the sum of their parts.
Yes.
And they also involve bigger things. I can't stress that enough. You don't want any grizzly bears or goblin pikers in your deck if you can get away with it. Just forget about them. They are beyond awful in Two-Headed Giant. I can assert this with authority. Medibot and I have been through the rigors on this.
We
decimated people. We crushed people who were running those
cards. We took a little
cards.
Damage from the grizzly bears, and then we played our better things, and then we stopped taking damage.
Yeah.
And started
and
crushing.
We also started gaining life.
Yes.
With our gigantic life-linking things, or our effects that allowed us to deal damage and gain life at the same time, and stabilize that way. You want to be toward what Magic players commonly refer to as the control end of the spectrum. An aggro deck is trying to end the game as fast as possible. A control deck is trying to slow the game down to the point where you have control over what's going on, and you cannot be killed anymore, and then kill at your leisure with something that's more inevitable. A control deck has greater inevitability in that sense.
Yes.
And running bigger things will help you do that. Just in raw casting costs, in a lot of cases. Just by saying, wait, this costs 5 mana. Okay, here we are. My curve basically started at 5. What did I even have that was 4 or less? I guess Archaeomancer, but that was just to rebuy my spells.
I think you had a... What did you have at less than that?
Okay, Searing Spear, but that's...
Yeah, you had your Searing Spear.
That's just a kill spell,
removal.
Fine.
Removal
is still good.
Yes.
Because your opponents are still going to have things that you want to kill, and in all likelihood, they're going to have, like, one or two really big, really important to kill things.
So, removal without numbers attached.
That's the best.
Yes.
removal that's bigger is even better than ever. Where you might not always want to run a public execution in a standard limited deck because it costs 6 mana, and that's kind of a lot of an investment to spend. You know, you spend basically your entire turn doing that.
Yes.
So you'd better get something pretty good out of it. Whereas in Two-Headed Giant, if your pool has a public execution, one of you is playing it.
Yes.
If you have two...
more total creatures...
possibly both of you are playing it. The blowout that you can establish with this card is even grander.
Yes.
Because, you know, I can hold back my public execution, and Medibot can play his creature to add to our collective side of the board, and we haven't wasted our turn if I don't need to end up casting it.
Yes.
And that's really, really important. So the big kill spells get even better. Those, you know, the ones that you kind of looked at and were like, wow, that's really cool, but it costs so much mana. This is the format where you get to play that thing.
Yes.
The biggest thing you've ever seen is not big enough for this format, all right? If you are playing a Rise of the Eldrazi set, and you have Emrakul the Aeons Torn, one of you is running that, all right? You should play that. That would be awesome.
Yes.
It's the biggest thing ever.
It's just huge.
You would be able to play that and run away with it.
Yeah. The format is slower, favors control, and big things.
It's toxic to 2 mana 2/1s and
yes.
2 mana 2/2s.
Small things that are just a small body don't cut it. If the small thing, you know, provides some beneficial effect, of course,
yeah.
The argument becomes different, you know.
So, for example, your deck was playing Attended Knight.
Yes.
Right? Because that was 3 mana for 2 bodies.
Yeah, it's 3 mana. It gets you a 2/2 first striker and a 1/1 token. So that's, you know, that's an extra chump blocker.
I think that we established the 3 mana 3/3 was about the smallest thing that we wanted in the decks.
Yes. As far as just, like, a creature who attacks and blocks, you start at the 3 mana 3/3.
If
you want to go any smaller than that, they need some ability or effect.
Yeah.
And, you know, I followed that rule. You know, I ran a Bond Beetle and a Yveth's Force Mage.
Ah, right. Getting to the other kind of thing you want to be doing in Two-Headed Giant that you cannot get away with in other limited formats. Synergy.
Ah, yes. Because you have a total pool of 8 packs, there's a decent chance, because you just have 2 more packs than if you were playing on your own, that you will have some kind of powerful synergy available for one, or possibly both, decks. And
Medibot and I mentioned before the combination of a hexproof creature and a powerful aura.
Yes.
That's a kind of synergy itself.
Yeah, so you, if you can, you know, cross your 2 decks, if, you know, things aren't in convenient colors to be in the same deck, they can be in different decks and still work together. But also, the individual decks themselves can have more synergy just within them from your greater total card pool. I was playing a green-white deck at our most recent Two-Headed Giant excursion, and a green creature that I made great use of in my deck, so great that I felt it was so important that we decided that I would run 2 copies of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very glad to have opened 2 copies, was called Roaring Primadox, which is a creature that's 3 and a green for a 4/4 beast, I believe, who says, at the beginning of your upkeep, return a creature you control to its owner's hand.
This seemingly innocuous statement keeps this guy out of most limited decks. Because, you know, if you ramp up or get to turn 4 or whatever, and you cast this guy, next turn you're going to have to bounce him.
Yeah.
And there's no real way around that, unless you have other creatures.
That's not so great. But in this slower format, where you have a bit more time to develop your board, I can turn this apparent drawback into a powerful weapon by filling my deck with creatures that have beneficial effects when they enter or leave the battlefield.
So let's see, who did you have? Bond Beetle, Elvish Visionary, Attended Knight,
Yiva's Force Mage.
Yiva's Force Mage, Battleflight Eagle,
yes.
Acidic Slime.
And of course the granddaddy.
Oh my goodness, yes.
I had a copy of Thragtusk in my pool, which is, I believe, 4 to green?
That's right, he has 5 mana.
He's 4 to green for a 5/3 beast who says when he enters the battlefield, gain 5 life. And when he leaves the battlefield, put a 3/3 green beast token into play. So he has both an ability entering and leaving the battlefield. So at the cost of, you know, getting this guy out alongside my Roaring Primadox for 5 mana every turn, I can gain 5 life for our team and put a 3/3 beast token into play.
So, man, what was I even doing in that one game where we gained 25 life off of that thing? I must have been unconscious.
You were bricking on land.
Yeah.
You were getting a poor set of draws, but I had my engine set up, and you know, you see these engines in your sealed pools, and you choose to play them because when they get online, I can 1v2.
Yeah, if you can establish some kind of combo deck. That's pretty good.
Yes.
Oh, and you can also, like, mill people out in this, because games tend to go longer anyway. Having one person be dedicated mill is pretty okay.
Mill, because of the slower nature of 2HG as compared to the normal one-on-one, it's slower, so mill just sort of automatically becomes a little bit stronger.
Mm. Oh, and what we mean by mill is any card that says put cards from your library to your graveyard, usually aimed at an opponent, the intent being to reduce the number of cards in their library so that they get to that secondary loss condition quicker.
Yes.
Mind Sculpt is one of these cards.
Yes.
Jace the Mind Sculptor himself does this. That's what we mean when we say mill.
Yes. Because, again, you only have to be hitting one player with this. You pick one person on the opposing side and say, you are my mill target this game. You just focus on their library, and as soon as they run out of cards, the whole team loses.
Think about it this way. You start at 30 life, which is a higher life total for that victory condition.
Yes.
But they still have the same 40 cards that they would in a normal game. So that victory condition is the same.
Yes. Well, 33 cards after the opening 7.
Yeah.
So that's only a difference of 3, which means that...
Oh, and they're more likely to keep their opening 7.
Yes.
Or keep an opening 7, because they get the extra mulligan.
They get 2 of them.
Oh, and they're also less likely to have a, like, an anti-mill plan, because you only get the 1 game.
Yep. So mill
so, yeah,
is
if you
a
get
little
to,
stronger.
If you get to establish synergy, if you get to set up a combo, or if you get to attack from a weird angle, these are all really good things to do in Two-Headed Giant that you really can't get away with in regular limited magic.
Usually the mill deck in normal limited magic needs a very high density of the correct cards. A lot of very defensive creatures, and a lot of just targeted mill effects.
So the last reason that you should play Two-Headed Giant and go forth and do all these things that we talked about and go skunk people who are, like, better than you at Magic, even though they're worse at this because they think they know everything. The reason I want you to do that is because Two-Headed Giant is just more fun than other kinds of limited Magic.
Your friend.
I can't tell you how many times that Medibot and I have, like, gone to a regular venue, right? And it's been a booster draft or been a sealed deck or something. And we get there and we, you know, talk for a while, and that's the interesting part. I get to spend time with my friend, right? And then the games begin, and we say, okay, see you after round one.
We'll see you in an hour.
But with Two-Headed Giant, I have my buddy right here the whole time.
Hanging out,
we
casting
play
spells,
together for the whole event, and you're never without a friend.
Yep.
And that's great. That turns the whole tournament experience into something actually more fun.
The dude you want to high-five after a sweet play is always right there.
Yeah. And you don't play too many games, either. Because it's only, like, four total games.
Four games.
On the day, so it's not as exhausting. I know there are people who like to just play tons and tons of games, but man, am I not one of them. I want all tournaments to be kind of brief.
Yeah.
Like, how many three and four rounds?
Was the Legacy event there? Nine?
That was the largest Star City Games Legacy Open ever.
Yes. It was nine rounds.
They went to nine rounds because of that. One round is at least an hour. You get 50 minutes for the round itself and 10 minutes in between rounds to set up and break down, but that 10 minutes tends to, you know, expand a little bit.
Slide.
It can expand a great deal more if there are some problems that happen, like at every tournament that involves this many people. There's bound to be one or two, just by statistical oddity, that causes problems. Or maybe is a thief, and they have to deal with that, and
they have to
spend judge time and resources. They might have to go find the presser. That takes time, too. So this nine-round event, that's going to be nine straight hours of Magic, at least. It's probably realistically going to be more like 11. How'd you like to do anything for 11 straight hours?
I have sometimes... No, see, even when I've been at work for 11 hours, it hasn't been 11 straight hours of work, because I'm very lazy and slack off a lot.
You mean you get a lunch break?
Yeah. Lunch. I'm on lunch.
Well, there ain't no lunch break in the Magic tournament. There's almost intentionally not. There's a whole other discussion in there about how tournament structure works.
The
point is, two at a giant, it's great.
Just nice, relaxing afternoon with your friend, playing Magic, play a few games. On average, the people I've played 2HG with have been friendlier, more attractive, and better smelling than my other Magic opponents.
And do you know why? It's because they have their friend there.
Because
if you're smelly,
these are people with friends who want to play a format about friends.
If you're smelly, your buddy's gonna notice. All right, you're not gonna like skip deodorant when you know you're gonna be next to your pal all day because he won't let you forget it. Yeah. You're not gonna get away with anonymity here. What else? They're happier because they're with
their
happier friend.
You joke around a lot.
Yeah. Oh, and as far as... you get to communicate with your friend about plays, and you get to look at each other's hands.
Yes. It's okay. Important you're allowed to communicate freely with your teammate, and you may share any private information that you do have.
Now, and my recommendation to you, and, like, all the teams that we played against, they would all, like, lean back and, like, cover their mouths and, like, discuss and chitter with each other. Medibot and I would just discuss openly.
It was just like, I got this thing.
Do you think I should kill that now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It takes less total time if you are just more open about your immediate
intent. We know you have
intent.
The kill spell.
Sure, you know, if you want to, point at your hand and make sure that your buddy is on board with the sequence that you both want to do and that you've both established. But as far as, like, the strategic things go, discuss it openly.
Yes.
Because if you don't discuss it openly, then what you're ultimately going to do is duplicate your efforts.
Yes.
If I have this discussion with Medibot in private and then act it out, I then have to negotiate with the opponents that that's happening. They haven't followed me to the logical sequence. Okay? So, case in point, we're in a pretty advanced board state. There are lots of total creatures on the battlefield. Yeah. And I'm negotiating with Medibot which one of our opponent's creatures I need to slay. And we sit there, we discuss, and we're like, well, is that more of a problem or is that more of a problem? And by taking that discussion to the opponents, they no longer have to sit there and think about it themselves when the time comes to reveal my hidden secret or whatever. They've already had that discussion.
One of your guys dies.
They know it's going to happen, so that part doesn't have to take twice as long.
Fast wizards.
Just discuss
wizards.
It openly. And even, like, speculate about what's in their hands. It's like, well, that guy probably has negate. If that guy has the big burn spell, then we lose. He's probably holding onto a forest.
Let's go for it.
Eh. Get in there.
I attack.
I cast public execution. You know what else I cast? Incremental blight. All kinds of cards that would never see the light of day in a regular limited format.
I cast flourishing defenses. You can't play that. That's a terrible. Wait.
You know what I cast? Polluted bonds. I think polluted bonds is the. You can look up all these cards. I want to talk about polluted bonds for a second. In another two-headed giant tournament that Medibot and I did exceptionally well at, I had a card in my deck called Polluted Bonds, which is black-black 3, enchantment. It's just an enchantment. And it says, whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, they lose 2 life, you gain 2 life. This is extremely terrible in any given 40-card limited deck. Right? It's about the last thing you want to be doing with 5 mana. You get to 5 mana in limited, you want to be casting, like, a big old creature. You want to be casting, like, Sarah Angel or something. Something that kills your opponent or deals with a serious threat that they pose. You don't want to be casting an enchantment that sits there and waits for the opponent to do something. Two-headed Giant, on the other hand, that represented a profound inevitability.
Yes.
Because I had 2 opponents. That card could do double duty.
Yes.
So suddenly it was as if the card cost half as much mana or did 4 damage and gained me 4 life instead.
4 damage, gain 4. Suddenly that's a pretty spicy hit.
That's really big.
Yeah.
That's a... what is that spell called? It's the black lava axe that's like 4 damage, you gain 4 life.
Yeah.
And it costs 5.
Essence Drain. Essence.
No. Essence Drain is the 5 mana, 3 damage, 3 life spell, and it can target a creature or player.
Siphon Soul.
Siphon Soul, I think, is what it's called. Yeah, it's black 3, sorcery, target player loses 3, you gain 3. Soul Feast?
Soul Feast. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's called Soul Feast. But yeah... Imagine having a soul feast that happens every time they play a land. That's so powerful.
They feel pretty smart.
That's huge. They couldn't get out from under that thing.
They couldn't solve it. It killed them.
I accelerated into it.
Drop it turn 4. Make him feel stupid.
And then they began their turn 4. One of them was, like, screwed on lands, and they were discussing whether or not they could afford to make their land drops and cast their more powerful things. Oh my goodness.
This is a good spot to be in general.
Whereas, like, Medibot and myself are just, we're playing as much land as we want. Okay, you play land, I gain 2 life. You lose 2. Man, that was huge. Oh, and as far as incremental blight goes, or any spell that has, like, a lot of targets, you can get away with casting those, whereas in regular limited format, you can't. In ordinary... limited environments, I discuss cards assuming that I have 3 creatures on the battlefield and my opponent has 3 creatures on the battlefield, because that's about average.
Yes.
In Two-Headed Giant, I can up that to 6.
Yes.
Because I have 2 opponents and I have a teammate.
And so although everybody it may not exactly be 3 and 3,
no.
Usually the math will still work out.
Yeah, it still averages out that way, more or less. I think it was, like, your 6 and my 0 for a lot of the time, but...
I was playing the... I had, what?
You were the creature's deck.
In my deck?
I think so.
That sounds about
And, like, every single one of them who was not Sarah Angel or Roaring Primadox had some Enters the Battlefield ability. It was absurd.
Yes.
I loved that deck. I loved my deck, too, because I got to cast Nicol Bolas Planeswalker.
You got to just slam out Nikki and just be
like... I cast Nicol Bolas. I crush you with the end boss.
Yeah, you.
I was
the
end boss.
And then, like, that keeps them from doing anything for a while. Meanwhile, my creature army just sort of sits there because we've got sort of a board stalemate. Then, oh, what did I... Oh, my, what's this? One of my 5-6 non-creature cards. It's Akroma's Memorial. I attack with my team. None of them tap. Also, none of those guys can block.
Yeah. Yeah. Crushings.
Crushings. Control deck. Then you draw your giant, stupid bomb. You know, in your case, Nicol Bolas. In my case,
yeah, but they have more. There are more total creatures, so things that like require your opponent to have 3 or more creatures before they're even castable are really good.
Fine. Any kind of cone is good.
Incremental Blight was really, really powerful in Two-Headed Giant.
Yes,
I ran 2 of them.
It's. I mean, that code's good enough for, like, not Two-Headed Giant, but is only better in Two-Headed Giant because you just have more targets and therefore better targets. Very powerful spell gets more powerful. Do note a little tip for the new people. You know, I just mentioned Akroma's Memorial, which gives... It says creatures you control have, you know, a whole mess of abilities. When it says you, it means you the player, not you the team.
That's right. Even though Medibot had his Akroma's Memorial out, my poor little Archaeomancer couldn't benefit from it. Although I could have pulled the old Switcheroo and given you an Archaeomancer.
That's true. Switcheroo is also pretty fun in 2HG.
Oh yeah, more total players because...
Doesn't even have to be involved.
We even theorized this at one point where... What I would do is swap my Archaeomancer for one of Medibot's things that he didn't need, and then he would return my Archaeomancer with the Roaring Primadox so that I could rebuy a different spell in my graveyard that I had already spent. So that would be, like, another way to get my, public execution back.
Yeah, turning your
switcheroo. Cast my gigantic spell again. So
I think what we ended up doing was swapping out my Elvish Visionary for their best dude.
Oh yeah, you got Sentinel Spider out of that.
Yeah,
exchange.
I got my Sarah Spider out of the deal. He got a 1/1 elf.
Yeah, switcheroo itself just gets way, way better because there's more creatures to consider.
Better targets.
More juicy targets. So, I hope you play Two-Headed Giant in the future.
Yes.
If you played no other format of Magic the
Gathering...
If you play
any paper Magic at all, make it this format.
Yes. Two-Headed Giant is great. Get a friend to play. You will have a blast.
Oh, high fives.
At the very least, you'll have your damn friend with you, so it won't be a wasted day. You get to spend time with them.
Hangouts. Donuts.
And
high
go get like
and/or commiseration.
Go get a dinner after that.
Yeah,
you know, it's not as long as other Magic tournaments, but it's still like 4 hours.
Yeah.
So get lunch, get dinner.
Make a day of it.
And combine efforts, the best of your skulls.